Welcome to Trilore Talk. I'm Scott Glovsky, and I'm your host for this podcast where we speak with some of the best trial lawyers in the United States. We simply have great lawyers, tell great stories from cases that had a profound impact on them. So let's get started. I'm very happy and pleased and humbled and honored to be sitting with my good friend Tyson Logan. Tyson is a phenomenal trial lawyer, a phenomenal human being, a phenomenal listener, and an all-around wonderful person. Tyson is a partner in the Spence Law Firm, and Tyson practices all around the United States. He handles lots of different types of cases, but has a particular specialty as well in handling carbon monoxide poisoning cases. Tyson, thanks so much for being with us.
I'm humbled to be here with you, Scott.
Tyson, can you tell us a story of a case that had a profound impact on you?
Yeah. You know, I think the case that has taught me more about life and myself and who I want to be than any other was a case that I was going to prove to the world what a stud I was. And I had read lots of books and spent quite a bit of time with big shots like Jerry Spence, and I was kind of just getting to the point where I was ready to show just how good I was, and did a lot of work on my own, kind of told my senior partners that I could do it, I didn't need their help. Developed a lot of fancy exhibits and got some great fancy experts and worked a lot on theatrical stuff so that I could really be impressive. And my client had been hurt. He had soft tissue damage from a heavy equipment accident, and he was really hurt, you know, and I cared about him. But the truth is, I think at the time that I was far more caught up with trying to prove to the world how well I could do in a courtroom. And I'll never forget, you know, I stayed up most of the night before my closing argument, and I was reading books over and over and over again. You know, I was reading Rules of the Road and Reptile and some of Jerry's books, and I can remember a whole stack on my hotel room desk, looking out over the street, thinking about the right analogies to use and the right things to say. And I gave what I was quite sure was this amazing closing argument. And I remember going out after the closing and high-fiving one of the federal marshals who had befriended me, or I had befriended him. He told me, man, that was so great. I never seen anything so great. I mean, there's no way. This is going to be amazing. And God, I was pretty high on myself. And we lost. I lost, and I cried the whole way home. And God, it took me years to even figure out that it wasn't about me, you know, and it set me on a path to start looking at who I am and why I do what I do and what's really important. And I started studying a lot and trying to learn from people, and I really did a lot of soul searching about what the point is, you know?
How did you do that?
Well, at first I just started reading more, you know, not just the books on closing arguments, but I just started reading everything I could find because I wanted to be better. I wanted answers. Why wasn't I good enough in my trial? What could I possibly have done? And then I got into a place where I really was struggling to be happy. I was stressed, and I started studying mindfulness and studying ego and trying to figure out why I was struggling to find happiness and balance as a trial lawyer and as a human, you know? And so I kind of did it as a trying to rescue myself from the chaos of being a trial lawyer and also just figuring I needed to be better and looking for answers. And so I started getting really into mindfulness, meditation, and trying to understand how to be happy and successful, you know, as a lawyer. And so, I mean, that's obviously, it's not like I have all the answers, but that's been, 10, 12 years now that I've been working on that. And carrying with me some of those moments from that trial. I mean, standing up there so proud in front of that jury, puffing my chest up and doing different things, trying to make myself look good. And man, I wish there was a better way to learn because I could have done better, you know, for my client. I don't know if it would have made a difference or not, but I'll carry that with me forever, no doubt.
Where does that come from in Tyson Logan, that need to prove that you're good enough?
You know, I was fiercely competitive as a child. I was firstborn and always wanted to be better and bigger and whatever. In sports and in school. And then by luck, I ended up in Wyoming. And so I kind of stumbled into an internship at the Spence firm as a law student. And I was always competitive, but growing up as a baby lawyer around, you know, Jerry and a whole crew of hyper-talented, hyper-successful trial lawyers and being fortunate enough to just be around people around the country that I, you know, just were heroes to me for what they do and wanting to be like that and pushing myself and wondering, you know, if I could be like that and whether I belonged in that law firm or around those people. And so I think for a long time it was just wanting to belong, wanting to be good enough. Maybe it still is. I don't know. I think over the years I've learned that my motivation's definitely changed. I mean, it's not about me, you know. I have passion. I want to go help people. I it fills me up to go be able to contribute a little bit and fight for people that need help. And so it keeps me motivated and then that keeps me wanting to learn and get better too, because I've been really lucky to be around lawyers who I feel like I could never be as good as, but I guess sure try, you know.
So now that you've got tremendous verdicts, I know you have the largest verdict in the history of the Spence Law Firm, and that's saying something. So you must have figured it all out. Can you share with us the easy answers?
Well, no. Look, everybody, I mean, in my limited experience, I mean, big verdicts, small verdicts, I mean, we lay it out there on the line for our clients, and sometimes cases are big and sometimes they're small, but really we're just there to do our part, you know, give ourselves and give everything we got, and we don't control most of it. And so, I feel like some of my successes, I guess, that I've had with huge teams of people, partners, you know, and others from other firms and all over the world. You know, sometimes I feel like they're my biggest failures. I look back and I think, you know, what did I sacrifice? What did I give? And did I really do a good job, or was it just luck or somebody else? And so, I mean, the success to me is when I know that I have helped somebody get to a better place. And that's, you know, when I look back and or look forward and think about what the point is, I think that that's what I do know. I know that that's what makes it all worth it, is can we help somebody? Because at the end of the day, money or whatever, getting a big ego off of a verdict or something like that, it just doesn't really matter. I would far prefer to be able to look back and know that I made a difference in even a couple people's lives. And how you do that, all I've learned, and the more I study and work at it, the more I realize, for me, it's just work hard and care and give what you can give. And some people have different talents. But that's, the more that I've done this, you know, the more that it makes me want to just work harder and give a little more of myself, because that's, in the end of the day, that's what matters to me.
Tyson, I know you, and I know that you're constantly giving to those around you, your friends, your family, your clients. How do you deal with the stress?
Sometimes not very well. You know, sometimes it starts to eat me alive. And usually when it starts to eat me alive, I get much better at working at the things that help me to sort of get back to the surface. I, you know, as part of that whole study and journey dealing with mindfulness, and I've become a pretty big believer in meditation, and I try not to be a preacher about stuff, but I meditate a lot, especially when I'm in the middle of trial or in a big push of work or life stress. I'm a big believer in meditation because it starts me from a centered place. So I meditate early in the morning. And that definitely does amazing things for me. It allows me to find a place that I can return to center. And if I do it in the morning, I find that I can come back to that place of being centered and grounded, even in the chaos of the middle of a courtroom in front of a jury or a judge when things get panicky or crazy. So meditation is probably my biggest sort of healer for me. And the other is exercise. And I need the oxygen and the sunshine sometimes, or the rain. But getting outside and getting my body moving and sort of letting go, you know, it's, for me in a way, it's kind of like moving meditation, but I'm a sort of a outside exercise junkie. And I feel like that's a pretty good, kind of yin and yang to what we do, you know, carry in heavy circumstance, heavy, high stakes, pressure filled cases or people's problems or whatever is, to allow just a little bit of freedom and also just to sort of stop thinking for a while, you know? So those are the two things that I really work at is meditation, exercise, and then just remembering what the whole point is, you know, and try not to lose track of who I'm doing it for and stay in touch with the people that I want to help. And that really, I think when I'm taking myself too seriously or getting too wound up and I get back in touch with a client who's struggling or who needs something, I feel like I can pour myself into that. That really does a lot for me, you know?
I know that you almost died in an avalanche.
I did.
And I'd like you to share with us how that impacted your life and your career. And you can tell the story briefly if you want.
Yeah. So I live in Jackson Hole in Jackson, Wyoming, and I love to ski. I love to ski in the backcountry. And when I was in law school, actually, I was in a pretty serious avalanche on a big, big stormy day in the backcountry, out of bounds at the Jackson Hole Mountain Resort. I was with my wife and all of my best friends who are skiers and serious skiers. And it was, you know, it's crazy. It was like one of the best ski days of my life. Deep, deep powder, stormy, cold, and just kind of euphoric morning. And, you know, I've always been a little bit of a adrenaline junkie, I guess. But it's, you know, there's a euphoria that goes with that kind of environment. And I don't know if I was just unlucky or made a bad choice. I mean, it was definitely both and some other issues, but I skied in a spot where I shouldn't have skied, in a unstable, dangerous avalanche conditions, and I was swept down a slope in a wall of snow down the entire hill and lost my skis and was swimming, you know, tossed and turned and thrown over a cliff and through a forest of trees and you know, shot down the mountain completely out of control. And by complete luck, I was able to catch one of the trees at the bottom of the stand of trees before the creek drainage at the very bottom of the canyon, probably 1,000 feet below where I'd been swept off my feet by this avalanche. And it beat me up pretty good. I was in pretty bad shape, bloodied and missing a ski and some poles and glove and hat and goggles and things like that. But, you know, kind of standing up at the bottom of that experience and, you know, everybody was gone. I was by myself. It turned out later they weren't more than a few hundred yards away at the bottom of the slope because they had already skied. But my friends and my wife, girlfriend at the time, no wife, you know, it was a sort of like an out-of-body experience where I was so full of fear and so full of panic and so unable to control anything with my life in, you know, just like rolling the dice. And it really, I mean, I guess it scarred me, but it really heightened my awareness to just sort of the way I live my life. And it's been on my mind a lot lately because I have connected the dots over the last few years that some of the anxiety and the overwhelming feeling, the fear, the losing control of life, you know, that's sometimes it's the way I feel as a lawyer, with just the chaos and the burden and the weight that we carry, that I carry, I guess, it kind of feels like that. And so I've been trying to learn from that. From that experience, because it's something that I've carried with me, and then I've learned to recognize that I have those same feelings from stress that I did in that avalanche, and so that's been a pretty powerful thing for me, you know, trying to learn to how to deal with those feelings and deal with those fears in both of those ways.
You talk a lot about control. You know, as lawyers, we strive to control everything. Do we?
Yeah, we sure think we do, right? We think we control all kinds of stuff, you know? If I stand up here and really impress these jurors, if I tell this witness in a positive instead of negative way, he'll answer it this way. You know, I think we control a lot. I mean, and it's what we're used to. It's really what our job is a lot of times. Help people, deal with witnesses, go take a deposition, do whatever. And we sort of become almost high on the idea that we can control everything. And I think sometimes it's completely delusional, in my opinion. And I you know, I've been around a lot of big egos. And I've had probably an unhealthy ego for a long time myself, but I sure believe that we can do a lot, but I think it's really important to work for me at building my awareness of in reality what I can control and what I can't, and just knowing that and being okay with it. You know, it's okay that I can do my part, and maybe my part can be really awesome. But there's things going on in a trial, you know, there's things going on with a jury and with witnesses and with our client that I can do my best, but I can't control what's going to happen. I mean, I don't know of anyone who's ever walked into court and tried a case and had everything go the way they planned it, you know? I sure haven't. And the reality is that's life. I mean, we don't control that much. I mean, and the other thing that's been eating at me lately is that I've lost close friends in avalanches. I've lost close friends to illness. You know, our clients, you know, we sort of just tend to ignore it, but people walk across the street and get hit by a truck every day. I mean, they don't control, you know, so to sort of think that we can control everything in our life is pretty naive. I mean, we depend on so many forces and so many people around us every day, all the time. And I think that for me to be able to recognize that, to look around and see how it takes a whole universe with me to be able to accomplish anything, and at the same time to be able to fail, and that's okay, you know? So I work at that a lot, at, you know, for myself, remembering and learning over and over and over again what I can control, what I can't, what can I improve? And what do I just need to learn that maybe I can't do anything about, you know?
There's a lot of young lawyers out there who are looking for advice on how to get better. and trying to figure out what skills to develop to be a great trial lawyer, what skills or advice would you have for them about what they should work on?
You know, I don't have it all figured out. I'm just starting to try to figure it out. But I certainly have been looking and listening and trying to learn for a long time. And boy, learning to listen.
What?
Learning to... I mean, I think that to get to a point where you would have the ability and courage to represent a client, period, you've got to be confident enough and competent enough to have survived through law school and believe in yourself to some extent. And so I think that it's really easy to get caught up in believing you can kind of Superman your way through anything. And for me, if, you know, especially when you get caught up thinking you can control things and you're in charge, I constantly am having to remind myself and work on and learn from friends around me like you and so many people I've been able to work with in my firm, my partners, people that I work with, you know, people out at the Trial Lawyers College. You know, I can learn from so much from the people all around me. And if I just open my eyes and actually look at people and actually hear what they have to say and am not caught up in my own stuff. So, I mean, part of that is just maybe taking myself less seriously sometimes. But I think, yeah, I mean, work on listening. Just shut up and be quiet and hear what people have to say and actually hear it. You know, hear it in my real life, you know, in my personal life, and hear it when I go talk to a witness or my client or the judge or the opposing expert. You know, it's so tempting to go show them that you can conquer them, you can crush them, you know, that the other expert or the defendant. But if I would just listen to them, I'll learn something that I can use later. And something I work on constantly. And I think that we don't teach people in law school, something we work out at the ranch on a lot is helping people become better listeners. But I think a lot of people forget it, want to work on how do I give an opening statement? How do I give a closing argument? Well, you can't give an opening statement if you haven't actually learned the reality, the truth from the people who you need to tell the story from the witness stand during the trial. You can't even get to your opening unless you've been able to listen to the jurors in the box in the voir dire, you know? And so I just think that in every way for lawyer success and just life, working and learning to really listen and be okay with some quiet is something that goes a long ways.
I've seen in your Facebook posts that you often include a hashtag soulshine. What does that mean?
Well, that's something that I originally saw. I love Michael Franti. He's great. He's got such a positive message out in the world, and he's got a couple. He's got some soul shine, soul this, soul that. And he's a very soulful, positive spirit. And soul shine for me kind of has a different meaning. It's like a, you know, sometimes I use social media and will post and sometimes I kind of have to walk away from it for a while just to give myself a little peace and quiet. But I do use that saying soul shine as like a reminder of like, what is it in my life that brings me joy? What makes my soul shine? And so it's just a little reminder, you know, to find a piece of joy and hang on to it. You know, it's like, I feel like so many of us, and I get caught up being busy and stressed and whatever, and so worked up about this case or that case or money. And I really work to try to remember to find pieces of joy for my soul. And that's something that, you know, I can hang on to for a long time. And you get a little bit of that, something that makes your soul really sing, and it can carry you through the hard times. So for me, that's something I've hung on to.
Finally, you have two beautiful boys, and I think we can learn a lot about someone from the advice they give their kids. What do you tell your kids as far as the most important aspects of life? Do you have any sayings or phrases?
I tell them, almost every day to be kind. We talk a lot about what's really important. You know, they're little boys. They're obsessed with cars. They're obsessed with clothes and haircuts and stripes in their hair. and you know, material stuff. Or hey, Dad, if you win your next case, can we get this? And I lay down with them at night. I try to every night, and I ask them, you know, would that really make you happy? Well, yeah, that would be so fun. You know, if we got a Ferrari, we could go really fast. So would that really make you happy? What makes you really happy? I mean, you know, and we talk about, I try to remind them, and, you know, they're boys, but try to remind them what really fills us up and what's really important and how long we can have joy and happiness from being able to help people and by kindness. And so that's my big one.
Well, Tyson, on behalf of our listeners, on behalf of your clients, and on behalf of all the folks that you teach around the country, thank you. Thank you for taking the time to be with us. I'm very, very appreciative, and it's my honor and great joy to call you friend.
Me too. I'm happy to be here with you, and just really grateful. So thank you.
Thank you for joining us today for Trial Lawyer Talk. If you like the show, I'd really appreciate it if you could give us a good review on iTunes, and I'd love to get your feedback. You can reach me at www.scottglovsky.com. That's scottglovsky.com. And I'd love to hear your feedback. You can also check out the book that I published called Fighting Health Insurance Denials, A Primer for Lawyers. That's on Amazon. I put the book together based on 20 years of suing health insurance companies for denying medical care to people, and it provides a general outline of how to fight health insurance denials. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you in the next episode.